Choisters. Welcome to Choices Podcast. It's wonderful to have you with me today. As always, thank you for making great choices and listening to Choices. I am your host, Christine Choi. Don't forget about the subscribing, the 5-star rating, and the rave reviewing. Okay, thanks. So, I missed you guys. I am so sorry that I have been MIA the last couple of weeks. I was traveling a little bit, and then coming back and playing catch-up has not been as smooth as I had hoped. I hope you guys didn't miss me too much, and maybe you've re-listened to some old episodes, or caught up if you weren't caught up yet. I sure hope so. Today, I have for you the third and final episode of the Me Too Our Story series. On today's episode, I have more amazing and brave women who shared their stories with me. And there's a lot that I want to discuss on this episode, and I really hope that not only does this bring more light to what's happening with the Me Too movement, but also that I can open your eyes and minds to some things that you may not be very familiar with. This episode deals heavily with how sexual assault can affect mental health. We talked about it a little bit on the last episode, but I wanted to get a little deeper into it, especially with one of the women's stories from this episode. Please be aware that this episode contains adult language and content.
I became frozen with fear and went somewhere far away in my head as he did this.
I wanted to share this clip with you at the top of the episode today for a couple of reasons. One, I recently listened to a podcast where its male host was talking to his guests about how he just had never thought about the victims of sexual assault freezing in the moment. He sympathized with the powerlessness that they may feel, but just could not empathize because he's a healthy man who is over 6 feet tall. I mean, I still commend him for realizing that and talking about it. And I gotta say, too often when things like this happen, victims freeze up and basically leave their bodies because that's the only way that they feel in that moment that they can deal with the situation. Some people are just so quick to judge victims and saying, why didn't you scream? Or why didn't you run away? Why didn't you whatever, blah, blah, blah. And you heard from a few other women who shared their stories in the previous episodes. You freeze. You can't make a sound. You can't make a move. It's a terrible experience in so many ways. This is something that more people need to be aware of and be understanding of before judging somebody. And secondly, the mental illness that one of the women shared with me is dissociative identity disorder. According to National Alliance on Mental Illness, DID most often forms in children exposed to long-term physical, sexual, or emotional abuse. Dr. Bethany Brand writes that it happens when a child's psychological development is disrupted by early, repetitive trauma that prevents the normal process of consolidating a core sense of identity. So when a child goes through extreme trauma, they develop multiple identities or alters. According to people with DID, those alters each play different roles, and generally they're all trying to protect the host from the trauma. But not all people with DID communicate with their alters, and the host may or may not see and hear what's happening when their alters are out. The clip I played is not from the woman with DID. Here are the women's stories.
When I was 18, I traveled out of the country. At the same time I was there, I had a couple other friends who were there as well, and a friend that moved there a couple years back, which was great. One night, we all went out drinking. We were all having a great time, definitely overdoing it. It's what you do on a vacation, right? So I got up to go to the bathroom, and I don't exactly remember how the layout of the bathroom was, but the friend that lived there was suddenly there. I think it was maybe a unisex bathroom with a couple of stalls. That's what I would assume. I'm not sure if he had locked the door or just closed it and no one had come in, but either way, I wasn't able to go outside. At first, it was fine and friendly. It's good to see you. This is so fun, etc., etc. Then he started kissing me. I had never thought of him in that way. I don't honestly remember my immediate reaction, but I know I didn't want anything from it. I know I told him to stop. He didn't listen. He heard me, but he didn't stop. He started to get more and more aggressive and pinned me against the wall and started touching my breasts and running his hands up and down my body. I tried to get away from his hold, but I wasn't strong enough. I had to use my words, and I started getting more and more strong with my words. Stop fucking touching me. Get the fuck away from me. I'm gonna fucking kill you. If I remember correctly, I stayed pretty calm through it. But who knows? That was over 10 years ago. But anyway, he let me go. And we got back out to our table. We sat back down and proceeded with the night as nothing had happened. I didn't talk to him for the rest of the trip. I didn't talk to him after the trip. I'm sure I kept my distance the rest of the night, but we did hang out the rest of the night.
When I was 9, we lived at this neighborhood that we played with a bunch of the kids, and we were playing hide and go seek. And there was this one kid in our neighborhood who was a little bit older, but he was kind of like an older brother to me. So he's like, hide with me. We're going to hide. I have this great place. And he molested me. He fingered me and felt me in certain ways that were not okay when he was 15 and I was 9. I don't think I really realized what was happening. He was doing things and he was like, are you okay with this? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, this feels good. This feels good. This feels good. Like he was telling me that this is something that should feel good. And I remember I had gum in my mouth because I remember he made me kiss him and he was like, put your gum in my mouth. And then he put it back in my mouth. And then I went home and I like spit the gum out immediately. I was raped by my boyfriend in middle school. I didn't want to have sex and he wanted to have sex. And he basically made me have sex. And then he told everybody that I was a slut and that I fucked him. And that was not something I wanted to do. And then I broke up with him. And then it was because, oh, she broke up with me because she's a slut and she's ashamed of what she did. I never wanted to have sex with you. You raped me. I told you no.
I was a 19-year-old college student, but this isn't a date rape story. I was crashing with an older family member at the time, as I was working hard just to pay for school on my car. This family member was so gracious and generous to allow me to stay with her in her great apartment just a mile from the beach. But she was also very strict and insisted on a curfew that didn't jive very well with the social life I was accustomed to. I was grateful for her for letting me stay with her, but I was young, and I was used to coming and going as I pleased by then, so I took advantage of the times my aunt worked night shifts at her job and went out then. I wasn't into hard drugs or anything dangerous. I would just meet up with friends at their houses or other local spots to hang out and have a few beers or whatever. On one of those nights, I got home around 1 a.m. I parked my ugly but reliable used car on the curb right in front of the apartment, as usual. As I got out of the car and stepped onto the sidewalk, which is just a few yards east of the apartment's front door, I noticed a young man. He looked about my age, or maybe just a little older. He was walking on the same sidewalk and in the same direction I was headed, but he was several feet behind me. The neighborhood was quiet at that hour, and no one else was around. But a street light illuminated my parking spot and my path to the house. And I was naive and didn't feel afraid in the least. I made eye contact with the man and even acknowledged him with a cursory nod before turning my back to him as I walked toward the door. Just then, my phone sounded with a text, and when I looked down to read it, I suddenly heard the sound of footsteps running up fast behind me. Before I could even react, two arms roughly grabbed me from behind. The left arm circled my waist, caging my left hand in against my hip, while the right hand pinned my right arm painfully to my body with an elbow because the hand was busy pressing a cold, sharp object to my neck. There were hot, rapid blasts of steam on my neck, too, while the stranger caught his breath. I heard myself saying, "Take it, here." Since he attacked me right after my phone rang, I thought he was robbing me, and I just wanted him to take my phone, my keys, my purse, whatever he wanted, and just leave. He didn't take the phone, though, or anything else. He just took a few more ragged breaths and finally said, "This knife is very sharp, and if you scream or try to run, I will cut you open." "I won't," I eagerly promised him. "I won't. Just don't hurt me." He didn't respond or even move for a while. He couldn't catch his breath. I could feel his heart beating frantically against my back. It occurred to me in that moment that he was scared too. I thought to myself that he was like a little boy who had somehow caught a rabbit and now he didn't know what to do with it. I know it seems crazy that I'd be dreaming up metaphors in a terrifying situation like that, but the thought came so clearly to me. I didn't want to move a muscle. I started to think about what I could say that might convince him to let me go. So when he finally came out of his fear and began to grope me, his right hand kept the knife pressed to my neck. His left hand went up to my shirt and grabbed at my breasts, then down to my pants, which he unbuttoned roughly before thrusting his hand down into my underwear and jabbing at my genitals with cold, stiff fingers. I became frozen with fear and went somewhere far away in my head as he did this. So I'm not sure how long this went on before he spoke again. "Just let me finish and I won't hurt you." He was hurting me, though, and I struggled against the vertigo I recognized as the feeling experienced just before fainting. Then, somehow, I found my voice again. "Okay, that's okay. I won't scream or anything, but listen, that call I just got, that was my crazy uncle who I live with right here in that building. He's angry because I'm late getting home, and if he looks out the window right now and sees us, he will kill us both. I'm serious. He's got a gun, and he's crazy." The stranger didn't respond immediately, but a moment later suddenly jerked his hands from my clothes and made a sound of anger or frustration, and then he held my shoulders and said, "I'm going to go now. I'm sorry." He left those words hot and wet in my ear as he pivoted and sprinted back in the direction he came from.
I do not know at what age my story begins. I know what age the first part of the story ended, but I don't know when it began because I don't remember a time in my childhood where I was not being molested by an uncle. That part of the story ended at 7 when I was raped at 7 years old. The second part of the story is 3 years later at 10 years old being molested in a park by a friend of my brother's. The third part of the story is another 3 years later at 10 being molested in a movie theater.
It was my final year of college and I had gotten over a really ugly breakup. I was finally looking to start dating again, and I met this guy through a mutual friend that I met in the beginning of that year. We talked and found out we were into a few of the same things, mostly movies and collecting trading cards. He insisted that he was a nice guy who was going through some pretty hard times. He was about to be a new father and was really scared. I tried to be there as a friend and help him out, but he got really into me really fast. He would text me daily, sit beside me every time we had free time together, and walk me to my classes, and at the time, I thought it was kind of cool. I liked the attention and the validation that I was attractive after the last breakup had really shaken my confidence. We had talked about that breakup, and he said he would never treat me like my ex had, and I believed him. I had no reason not to. He was a nice guy. He asked me out with a poem, including my name in it, and I had to give him credit for creativity. No one had ever asked me out that way. I said yes, but that I wanted to take things slow. I was still unsure of how ready I was for something serious. He said he would take it slow, but that is not what happened. We went on a couple normal dates, to the movies a couple times, but he wasn't fond of it when I would spend time with friends or family without him. Then he lost his job. With a new baby and this, he got so much worse. He got really clingy. I had to text him whenever I wasn't in class and had to tell him where I was. He would get upset when I would go more than a half an hour without texting him back. After 3 months of this was the first time I tried to break up with him. He took me away from everyone and totally isolated me into a dark corner of the school cafe where no one could see us. He backed me against the wall and towered over me. I'm only 5 feet tall and he was over 6 feet tall. So this was terrifying. We continued to date, but at the end of that year, I left college to pursue a career in real estate. He said he supported me. He was kind of excited I was working. but he still demanded that I texted him constantly. He got a job a couple months after that, working as a pizza delivery guy, and things got worse again. He would call me every time he was in the car and demanded that I answer. I usually answered because I didn't want him putting himself or others in danger. I tried to break up with him again when I had friends around, but somehow he broke me down and talked me out of it. My best friend was livid, and she went at him, and he promised both of us that he would change. But we all know how that goes. He started belittling my work and taking me away from it because I didn't have set hours, so he would demand that I would take days off with him. Then he lost his job, and he just made me take more and more days away from work to spend time with him. And he would become more and more upset when I would spend time with friends and family. He would blow up my phone so much that my phone would die from it. And he just wanted to be a part of everything I did. He wanted to be a part of everything I was. And slowly, I lost myself. He broke me down, and I cracked. All of the stress and the pressure triggered memories I had repressed of childhood sexual abuse. And it started as nightmares, and it was making me really crazy. In hindsight, I probably should have went to the hospital because of the severity of this psychological break, but I tried therapy first. She diagnosed me with dissociative identity disorder, and all my imaginary friends and stories I had quote-unquote come up with over the years were actually my split personalities. It was a relief to understand it all finally. All my struggles through my whole life were because of my DID. Several times he drove me to those therapy appointments, which was almost 45 minutes away, and on the way back he would ask me everything that I've discussed with a therapist. But I would lie to him because I didn't want him to know what I was talking about. One time, to get him to stop writing me about what I was talking about, I told him one of the nightmares. And I would later come to deeply regret this. My sex drive totally withered during this time and had never really been that high to begin with. However, he grew more and more forceful demanding that too. He felt that he deserved it because he was a good boyfriend and a nice guy. I was so exhausted and in need of some kind of comfort that sometimes I would just give in just so that he would hold me after, even after telling him no repeatedly before that. My no meant nothing to him because he always was able to wear me down. I remember one distinct time he insisted on taking me to his house after therapy. He tried to have sex with me and I became physically ill as he touched me. He only stopped when I went pale and I rushed to the bathroom. He did take me home after that. Once I was home and away from him, I started to feel better. I pretended to have the flu just so that I can get a week away from him. All over me. One night, after months of being treated horribly, I finally put my foot down. I told him that I did not want any more sex. We had already done the deed multiple times, and that I wanted him to take me home right then. That's the moment I regretted telling him about my nightmare. He reenacted it move for move.
This is how Mental Health America defines sexual assault. Sexual assault refers to sexual behavior that occurs without the clear consent of the victim. This includes attempted rape, fondling or unwanted sexual touching, forcing a victim to perform sexual acts, such as oral sex or penetrating the perpetrator's body, and penetration of the victim's body, which is rape. Something that really stood out to me was this next sentence. It's something that I wish more victims understand. Force does not just mean physical force. It includes manipulation, coercion, threats, and situations where a person is unable to give consent. And this kind of explains why most of the women who share their stories with me, and actually even some who didn't share their stories with me, have said, there are so many stories, I don't even know which ones are really sexual assault, and I really don't even know where to start. And It has been so disheartening to hear that through this process, just how small the women felt their stories were in comparison to other women's. It's not a comparison. And I want to make it clear that any unwanted sexual encounter is sexual assault, and no story is a small story, and that every story is worth being told, and every story must be told.
When I got back home, I told one friend what happened. He was a good friend who I shared almost everything with. He gave me his knife and told me to keep it with me at all times to protect myself in situations like that. I had a knife so I can protect myself. Aside from him, I didn't tell anyone about it. I mean, this is a unique situation because I never had to see this person again. I mean, he lives in a whole different country. So, that story died. As the Me Too movement started, and the story started coming out, I didn't tell my story. I wasn't raped. I never had to see him again. Over a decade had passed. I didn't think my story was anything.
The game was over, and we were still hidden because no one found us. And 30 minutes later, I just went home. And then my parents were like, "Where were you?" And I was like, "Oh, I was just hiding, and I didn't know the game was over. And I just came out. I just made up a lie." This was like a person that was our family friend. It was like a person that was really close to us. It was really hard for me because after that, he came over all the time. It was a weird situation for me because it was like we lived on the street and we were super good friends with all of these people. We knew his mom and his dad. So I always felt like, oh, if I say something, then he's going to get in trouble. That's kind of how I always felt. And then it just got to a certain point that it just has been something that I didn't talk about for so long that I was just like, well, there's no reason to talk about it now.
I just ran as fast as my numb legs could carry me to the apartment. But I remember unlocking the door, going inside. I just remember vomiting in the shower and calling a friend I had been with earlier that night to tell him what had happened. I remember this friend calling me from his car, asking me for a description of my attacker because he was out looking for him, but I couldn't tell him much. I didn't call the police. I didn't want the family member I was staying with to know. I thought she'd be angry at me for breaking curfew and that she would kick me out. And I thought the police would just ask me why I was out so late or maybe detect that I had a couple beers earlier that night and send me home with a warning. I never told anyone else. I let that stranger go home without consequence for what he did to me. And for all I know, he's done it and worse to others since then. I've never stopped feeling guilty about that.
I never said anything to anybody until about 6 years ago, because in my house, we did not talk about sex. So therefore, I did not know what rape was. I didn't know what molestation was. I was never taught appropriate versus inappropriate. I never was taught anything like that. And so I can't help but wonder if I had been informed and educated about those things, how I maybe could have stopped this situation. And the uncle that did everything was a loved uncle, and everybody in my family thought he was awesome. And just like how many, many other women say, I didn't think I would ever be believed because everyone loved him. And I was fearful to lose the love that I had from them because I thought maybe they would choose him over me, believing him over me. The other parts of the stories, I never said anything because it began happening more and more often, and I felt shame, and I was broken by that point. I was completely broken by that point. There was no point in me ever saying anything because I was broken. And then about 6 years ago, I finally said something, and everybody in my family was so shocked, and everyone believed me, but everybody was so shocked because they never would expect that from him. But unfortunately, that's how it usually goes.
He used a condom and left no marks, so there was nothing physical. And since it was at his house, in his room, there was no one that could confirm any of this. Why I didn't report? The short answer is that my mental illness and my lack of evidence, I had no way of proving what had happened to me other than my own memories. That includes both my childhood sexual abuse by my own father and my rape a little over 2 years ago. I strongly believe in the justice system, and I don't think anyone should be put behind bars without proper evidence. My PTSD makes talking about what happened to me almost impossible without breaking down, and my dissociative identity disorder affects my memory. Sometimes they're so clear that I can give a detailed and vivid description of a moment like I'm watching it on a screen right before my eyes. But sometimes it's a blurry fog. Other times it's like the memory isn't there at all. It's frustrating and confusing for a lot of people to understand, but I find it hard to believe that I would be taken seriously in a court of law.
This is why the Me Too movement is so important. We need to have all these voices heard. We need to have all these stories heard. Also, something that really gets to me is the lack of feeling of safety for women. Why should a woman need a weapon in case someone attacks her? Why should a woman learn self-defense so that she doesn't get raped? I mean, why should a woman feel unsafe in her own neighborhood just walking from her car to her house? And I'm sure you know where I stand on this matter already, but just to clarify, I am totally 100% for women learning martial art and being strong and being strong women, but I believe that should be for the joy of the sport, the discipline, and the strength, and not in case she's attacked, right?
But I was wrong. My story matters, and all women and men need to know that these kinds of things happen all the time, and it is not okay.
There's a shit ton of things that I feel like I can hold a grudge against. I don't, because I don't want to live in that. I don't want to feel like a victim. I don't want to feel like I'm this person that bad things happen to, because I think that a lot of these things happen to a lot more people than a lot of us realize. And I think that if I held on to those things, what kind of person would I be? That's kind of how I think of it. I don't want to be an angry person because I didn't do anything wrong. But a lot of the people who are in these situations think, oh, I did something wrong, or I did this, and that's why they did this. I understand that you feel that way, but that was just not the way that I wanted to handle it. I was like, I'm not going to do that because that's going to ruin my whole life.
I think that if this had happened 20 years later, I would have been more cautious because I'd have been more aware of how common and non-discriminate sexual assaults are. I also think that if it had happened 20 years later, I would have told more of my trusted circle about it, and maybe even the police, because now that people are more aware and informed, it doesn't come with the shame and or fear of being dismissed or even blamed for it, like it often went until recent years. I'm a mother now, and I have a young daughter who will hopefully never know what it feels like to be physically violated without a voice, without justice.
But recently, I've begun to say me too more often, because I'm seeing all of these incredibly strong women everywhere standing up and saying me too. And their courage and strength has encouraged me to be saying it more often. Because what if somebody I know hears me say me too and they finally come forward with their story and they're able to heal? So to all the other women out there saying me too, thank you.
It took me 2 weeks to recover fully as I went through those days in a fog. Finally, he said he wanted to come get me from work and spend the day with me, and I told him to come. I worked with my grandparents, who are also real estate agents. I confronted him behind my office and told him I was done. He begged for a fourth chance, but this time, being so fucking done, I stood my ground. He tried to follow me in, but my amazing 14-year-old cousin blocked the door and my grandfather ran him off. And thankfully, that's the last time I saw him. I now share my story anonymously so that I can educate as many people as possible about what a sexual abuser acts like and how people can be groomed to succumb to attacks so easily. The one thing I would like to see more of is not necessarily just women empowerment, but human empowerment. We women are not the only victims. There are male victims and non-binary and trans victims as well. Sexual abusers can be anyone. Victims can be anyone. I want to see more all-around support and understanding for all survivors. And I want to see a focus on the mental health side of it all as well. The aftermath of trauma is a long and hard journey. And I'm just tired of seeing people struggle with it all alone.
Ah, these women are so amazing, and I am so glad that I can do even this small part in getting their stories out into the world. They are so strong, and it's just so amazing to see women having so much strength and watching all of us come together. You know, it may have come through some tough experiences, but it truly feels like we've come together as sisters through this movement.
As far as the last couple of years go, the only real thing I can say I've noticed is a trend of people thinking victims have to prove their truthfulness to not only a court of law, but to the court of social opinions as well. Everyone acts like they're judge and jury asking detailed questions about the incident, like they're trying to find out if you're lying or not. The public scrutiny of Dr. Ford recently hit me very close to home. The way people said Dr. Ford was lying because of the way she remembered events hurt deeply because sometimes memories of an attack aren't always clear. Many of us leave ourselves when it's happening. We repress parts of it to protect our own minds. The trauma that comes with being violated and being betrayed so deeply by a fellow human is often way too much for us to bear. So memories can be foggy or hard to recall. Some victims do remember in vivid detail every bit of what happened, but in most cases, it takes a while for the victim to process what had happened. And in people like me, who have suffered repeated abuse, the memories come and go. They have to for me to be able to function at all. I mostly talk about my experience with sexual abuse online, and often I've come across people who scrutinize every word people type. With my mental illness, I don't hold up under that kind of pressure. I crumble, I shut down, I stop talking, and honestly, I don't want to do that. I want to be believed.
40% of women with severe mental illness suffered from rape or attempted rape in adulthood. 44% of sexual assault victims are under the age of 18. 90% of dissociative identity disorder is developed in childhood through long-term traumatic events. Sexual assault is not the only cause of DID, but it is a cause of DID. Some of the mental illnesses that victims of rape or sexual assault are at an increased risk for developing are depression, PTSD, anxiety, substance use disorders, and eating disorders. This is a quote from an article on Psychology Today that stuck out to me. Along with an onslaught of brave people coming forward with stories of abuse and survival, some people saw something else: victim blaming. Commenters asked why victims wore what they did, didn't fight back, stayed out too late. Healthy, balanced people do not assault others, no matter what they're wearing. But blaming people for their own assault does compound the mental health effects of trauma and create a world where victims suffer in silence. Let's end this. No one should suffer in silence. Thank you so much, guys, for always giving your love and support. I would really like for you to go read about DID and watch some YouTube videos of people with DID. The media portrays DID, which was formerly known as multiple personality disorder, in some kind of way, and I feel like it's really unfair. I learned so much while doing my research, and I just wanted to share everything with you, but that would really take a whole another episode. So, go learn. Okay. And thank you again and again and again to all of the women who shared their stories with me and allowing me to share it with my amazing listeners. Your story matters. So that concludes the Me Too Our Story series, but the Me Too movement continues on. Thank you guys for listening and have a wonderful day. Okay, thanks. Bye.